cricket, lovely cricket. Well, it really is a feeling of cricket, lovely cricket this week, isn't it? I miss a cricket. What a fantastic week it has been for Test Match cricket. On tonight's show, we'll be reporting on England's massive win in Hyderabad. And equally joyous, the West Indies have sent a huge message after beating Australia down in Brisbane. Still quite haven't got my head around what happened last Sunday. If you were, had any interest in either of those games, there was no chance of a Sunday morning lie-in, I can tell you. Also tonight we'll be getting some news from around the counties, where Worcester has been particularly busy. There's a lot of comings and goings, I'll update you on those a bit later in the show. And our special guest is Ashes winner, World Cup winner and County Championship winner, former Yorkshire and Warwickshire player Tim Bresnan joins us for a chat. All the other usual features, news, chat, bit of music. I'm here till 7 o'clock. And I'm just waiting to hear how we've done in the Sports Podcast Awards, which are taking place this evening. Remember, 98 No Doubt has been nominated in the category Best Cricket Podcast. Hopefully you've all voted. If I get any news, I will let you know.
Got to lick the ball before it reach the wicket. The players in a full suit are wise. The players then say them not broke no fights.
Lots to squeeze in.
In a full suit are wise. The players then say them not broke no fights.
All right, let's get going as we always do. It's cricket birthdays of the week. A lot to get through this week. David Sid Lawrence. I remember him snapping his kneecap in New Zealand that time. He turned 60. Outstanding women's cricketer Shefali Verma hits the grand old age of 20. Seems like she's been around forever. Windies fast bowling legend Andy Roberts hits 73. England's oldest living Test cricketer, Surrey man Raman Saba Rao, hits 92. Other side of the Thames, Toby Roland Jones, 36. Jack Chantrey, 36. Australia's Mitchell Starc, 34. Fabian Cowdery, 31. Essex absolute legend Rob Rollins, 50. West Indies Fouad Backer, 70. Shoaib Malik, 42. Graham Smith, 43. AJ Jadeja, 53. Rakim Cornwell, 31. Moises Henriquez, 37. Claire Connacht, 48. Still a couple more to go. Upal Thuranga, 39. And Brett D'Oliveira, 32. Zach Crawley, 26. Dean Waugh, 55. And Danny Morrison, that's famous franchise cricket commentator and T20 specialist. Mr. Danny Morrison is 58. Happy birthday to everyone that's celebrating this week.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
And remember, if you want your name or someone you know read out on Cricket Birthdays of the Week, just get in touch. Email radio@phoenixfm.com. Title your mail 98 Not Out Birthdays and just tell me whose birthday it is and how old they are and anything else you want to say. And also, there are many ways, of course, to get in touch with the show if you want to interact. You can go using social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. And if you know me personally, you can send me a WhatsApp. There are many ways to get in touch.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Right, I just need to get myself a little bit organised because I'm in a huge rush this evening. So just while I sort myself out, here's a bit of music. This is the XX and this is Islands. The XX and a track called Islands. You're listening to Phoenix FM 98 on the FM dial. If you're in the Brentwood or Billericay area, you can listen also via the internet, phoenixfm.com, or as a lot of you do, just use your smart speaker, shout play Phoenix FM, and you should be coming through wherever you are via your smart speakers. Now, as I said, the Sports Podcast Awards are taking place as we speak, and someone's told me that the results are coming in thick and fast. So as I get them, I will let you know in terms of where we are, because we are nominated for the Best Cricket Podcast of the Year. I don't think we've got any chance in winning it, given the who we were up against, but you never know. I will keep you posted. Right, what a week it's been. Let's start with England. Now, England produced one of their best ever away wins, stunning India with a 28-run victory and a heart-stopping finish. My God, it was heart-stopping in the first test in Hyderabad. England really highly unfancied to win this test, or indeed any of the others that they're playing out there. I remember last week we had Rahul Patil from sportsfreak.co.nz come on, and he predicted a whitewash, but he's got that completely wrong. England, inspired by one of the all-time great innings by Ollie Pope and a beguiling 7 for 62 from debutant spinner Tom Hartley. England set India 231 to win and then hustled the hosts out for 202 in the extra half hour at the end of the fourth day. Beating a team that had lost only three of their 46 home tests is remarkable in itself, but England did it with a vastly inexperienced attack and with senior spinner Jack Leach hampered by a knee injury. Now, England recovered from a first innings deficit of 190. Only twice before in test history have they overturned such a margin to win. India have never previously lost a home test when taking a lead in excess of 100. But this is Bazball. This is the era of Ben Stokes and Baz McCullum. And It's just, you cannot take your eyes off any of this. The last 18 months have just been incredible. England recovered from a first, after England began on 316 for six, Ollie Pope pushed on to 196 glorious innings, the highest second innings score ever made by an England batter in India. The tourists were bowled out for 420 on the stroke of lunch. Now, that target should have been within India's reach, even on a wearing pitch, but the host buckled. England were led by the brilliant Hartley, who also made 34 with the bat. A bit early yet to be calling him an all-rounder, but there is hope. A collapse of 4 for 24 ripped the guts out of the Indian middle order and reduced the home supporters to an eerie silence. We don't like that much, do we? With India on the brink, KS Bharat and Ravi Ashwin combined for a rearguard partnership of 78 that made the crowd believe again, and England fans just chew their fingernails to the bone. India had the momentum, only for Hartley to bowl Bharat with an absolute beauty. So, in that case, the extra time was allowed and the shadows closed in. Ashwin danced past Hartley to be stumped, but India was still not beaten. Jasprit Bumrah and Mohammad Siraj swiped 25 for the final wicket before Siraj was stumped off Hartley to spark wild England celebrations. Captain Ben Stokes hailed England's 28-run test victory over India as their best since he became captain, and it was lauded by pundits and fans alike as extraordinary, phenomenal. Ollie Pope's 196... Oh, hang on a second, I'm just reading that again. We've had a lot of fantastic moments as a team. Great wins, Stokes went on to say. But given where we are and who we are playing, I think it's our greatest triumph since I've been captain. There's a couple of footnotes to this story. Just 18 months ago, Tom Hartley was playing for Lancashire Twos against Essex, just down the road at Billericay Cricket Club. And on that day, he took 6 for 60. And if that wasn't good enough, with the bat, he also managed to eke out a gentle 227. So the writing was on the wall there, and there were, I was down there, and there were a few people raising their eyebrows and clapping their hands at Hartley's performance that day. Now, India has lost 3 of their last 45 tests on home soil and never lost any home test after gaining a lead of more than 65. The second test begins tomorrow in the early hours, but India all-rounder Ravi Jadeja and batter KL Rahul have been ruled out, adding to the host's problems. Jadeja suffered a hamstring injury and Rahul a quadriceps issue during England's 28-run win in the first test. Remember, India are already without star batsman Virat Kohli, pace bowler Mohammad Shami and wicketkeeper Rishabh Pant. Sarfraz Khan, Saurabh Kumar and Washington Sundar have been added to the squad for the second test. Uncapped Sarfraz, aged 26, is a middle-order bat with a first-class average of 69.85, which is the fourth highest of all time. Spinning, bowling, all-rounder Sundar, 24, has played 4 tests, including 3 on England's last tour here, which was a 3-1 defeat in 2021. He made his debut in India's famous win against Australia in Brisbane earlier that year. The Aussies don't like it in Brisbane, do they? Kumar is a 30-year-old left-arm spinner with almost 300 wickets in first-class cricket. Now, former captain Kohli withdrew from the first test for personal reasons. We knew about that. Pant is a long-term absentee following a road accident, while Shami has a heel injury. Now, Paul Newman, friend of the show, wrote in the Daily Mail today that Shoaib Bashir will make his test debut tomorrow, coming into the side alongside Jimmy Anderson, as Mark Wood and Jack Leach miss out. England's 3 spinners have 3 test caps between them. And even more interesting, 2 of them were born after Jimmy made his test debut back in 2003. It's an amazing story. Now, Bashir would look to continue a trend of test debutants, thriving since Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum took charge of the England team. Seamer Matthew Potts took 7 wickets in the match on his debut against New Zealand at Lord's in 2022, while later that series, Jamie Overton made 97 batting at number 8 at Headingley. Both Will Jacks and Rehan Ahmed claimed 5 wicket hauls against Pakistan last winter, making Hartley the 3rd spinner to claim 5 wickets in an innings on debut under Stokes and McCullum. 98 FM.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
I mentioned Brisbane as being an unlucky place for Australia, and so it proved this time with the West Indies arriving. Australia went into this 1-0 up in a two-test series, and again, here's another example of why two-test series just cannot be going forward. I know there are reasons, but we can't have them. Shamar Joseph, remember the name, took 7 wickets as West Indies won a test in Australia for the first time since 1997. The tourists held their nerve in a thrilling finish to win by 8 runs and ensure a drawn 2-match series. Fast bowler Joseph, who had hobbled off in tears 24 hours earlier after being injured while batting, he broke his toe. He finished with 7 for 68 in Brisbane. Steve Smith carried his bat with 91 for Australia, but they lost their first day-night test match. Joseph, who quit his job, there's so many great stories around. Joseph, who quit his job as a security guard just 18 months ago, found plenty of pace at the Gabba to rip through the Australian batting order. He needed treatment before play and at one stage considered not even travelling to the ground for day 4, but somehow managed to recover to bowl almost 12 match-winning overs. Australia had cruised to 113 for 2 when Joseph bowled Cameron Green for 42 and Travis Head in consecutive deliveries. Despite Smith standing firm, Joseph worked his way through the Australian batting card before completing his side's first test victory against Australia anywhere in the world since 2003 when he cleaned up Josh Hazlewood. Tears would have come to my eyes, but I'd already cried when I got my five-wicket haul in the first test, said Joseph, who was named both man of the match and man of the series. It's just happiness. When was the last time we won in Australia? I can't even remember. Today is a big day for us. I feel like we've won the series, even though it's 1-1. Windies captain Craig Brathwaite said, we had two words that inspired us in this test. Mr. Rodney Hogg said we were pathetic and hopeless. We wanted to show the world that we aren't. Shamar Joseph said, I would always be available for the West Indies, no matter how much it takes or money comes, how much money it takes or comes towards me from franchise cricket. I will always be here to play test cricket. Well done, that man. And the two teams, having concluded their test series, will now play 3 one-day internationals, first of which is in the early hours tonight, and 3 T20s next. Something needs to be done, because I'll tell you what, the reaction around the world to these two results is just fantastic. Just scenes and words and reactions that you just never get. Certainly not with franchise cricket, and I would even go as far as to suggest with T20, you don't get the emotions flowing as they've done with this. Good old KP managed to pipe up. He said it's a fascinating discussion between the shortest format and test cricket. An argument can be had for saying that T20 has enabled a more entertaining test match arena. Also, it's just the old guard who keeps saying that the T20 format, etc., are expletive and want more tests. What they don't realise is the kids have zero interest in tests and the money in the game isn't coming from tests, and my greatest format is tests, although I love them more than anyone else, but we've moved on with the times. I've moved on with the times and realised that the future won't be tests for all nations. It just won't. Thanks for that, Kev. If you have got any thoughts on that, get in touch, reach out to me on social media. I just wonder, every time, I mean, there was Michael Vaughan last week, it's Kevin Peterson's turn this week. Do they really, you know, all of these guys came through the county system, the Red Bull, they wouldn't be where they are today and earning the money they're earning without being facilitated by the wonderful world of test cricket. The Under-19 World Cup is going on. England are on the brink of elimination after a loss to Australia in a rain-effective game that was settled by the DLS method. I'll be doing a more in-depth look at the Under-19 World Cup on next week's show. I've just got too much to squeeze in tonight. Some good news. The ICC has lifted its suspension of Sri Lanka cricket with immediate effect. Sri Lanka was suspended in November because of government interference as the country's Minister of Sport sacked the National Cricket Board after poor results at the Men's World Cup. That result was reversed by a court, but the ICC still imposed the sanction. Now it says that the ICC kept the Sri Lankan Cricket Board under review and is satisfied the body is no longer in breach of its membership regulations. Good news for them. Well done, Sri Lanka. I'm going to take a breath. This is Jules Buckley, Pete Tong and the Heritage Orchestra, and this is called Grey.
This is Phoenix 98 FM. Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM. Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
I'm John Charlie, inviting you to join me here on Phoenix FM on Saturday afternoons for Phoenix Sport. The top local, national and international sports stories, plus live scores, results, reports, interviews, quiz questions and my sporting anniversaries. And lots of great music too. That's Phoenix Sport, every Saturday from 3 till 6pm here on Phoenix 98 FM.
Tune into the Sunday Sessions on Phoenix FM every Sunday morning, 10 till 12, with me, Kevlar. I'll be bringing you tracks from local artists. Most of those tracks are recorded down at our open mic, which takes place every Monday at 8pm at the Essex Arms in Brentwood, right next door to Brentwood Station. Come along and just watch, or if you're a singer or songwriter, come along and sing us a song.
Sing, sing, sing.
It's me, Michelle Ward.
A prawn cocktail.
I love a prawn cocktail.
I'm always rambling. What's the mayor's chain called?
A chain.
In fact, I never stop talking. And I rubbed basically all of the skin off the inside of my thigh. You can answer my question of the day.
Michelle.
I think men go through the menopause from about the ages of 18 to 65. And after that, they die.
Fantastic guests and super music. What am I lacking in the diet? Humour, really?
Yes.
Weekdays 10 till 1.
The February issue of the Cricketer magazine is out now. We have a full preview of England men's test series in India with George DeBell, Jonathan Trott, Graham Fowler, Vic Marks and Mike Selby. Nick Friend looks at the relentlessness of today's domestic schedule and talks to modern cricketers who find it unsustainable. We also have David Gower reviewing England's one-day matches in the Caribbean before Christmas, and the former West Indies fast bowler Colin Croft comes off his long run to explain why West Indies players take the franchise buck. That's in the February issue of the Cricketer magazine, out now.
I'm really pleased to welcome Tim Brisnan to the show. You will, of course, know Tim, Ashes winner, England representative at all formats, and, of course, a glorious county career, both at Yorkshire and finally at Warwickshire before retiring in 2022. Tim, it's great to have you along. Welcome to 98 Not Out.
Thanks, Darren. How are you doing? I'm good, thanks.
I'm not bad. It's a very windy, blowy morning.
I just answered my own question there, didn't I? I got properly nervous. Hello, mate. How are you? I'm really good, thank you. Yeah, good.
Don't be nervous.
Out of practice. Properly out of practice.
I tell you what, doing this, I occasionally suffer from nerves. The biggest one I had was when I had Brodie on, and I had 2 minutes' notice of, do you want to talk to Brodie? He'll do it now, but it has to be now. And I was so nervous that we got him on, we hooked him up with the Zoom and everything, and I forgot to press record.
Oh, no, stinker.
Only halfway through the chat, I realised, and tried to cover my tracks. So, nervousness is the thing. I just wanted to talk to you about your cricketing career. Ashes winner, World Cup winner. It's not bad.
I did all right. Did all right. Good team around me, I think, was the thing. And do you know what? We had a really good team. We had a really good team. And we seemed to do the right things at the right time. Andy Flower was, like, ridiculously good at that time, still is. And we were on that upward trajectory, and we set targets to get to number one in the world in all three forms, and we did it. And it's like, well, now what? So we kind of had one of those reassessment times where everyone's like, well, we've got to try and stay exactly where we are. But obviously that's tough, because once you're at the top, everyone's shooting at you. So yeah, that's when the wheels didn't really fall off, I guess. You just, they saw that, you know, the way we were playing and what we did, and other teams emulated it and surpassed it. And that's just the natural sort of secular, the way that sport is, isn't it? Like, that's just what it is.
Yeah, you're right. It does. It goes in cycles, doesn't it? It's like, I've got a load. I mean, I don't know if you can see in the background, I've got loads of signed shirts and memorabilia from when I've been too drunk at big dinners and put my hand up at the wrong time. And it's quite funny when some of the ones that are in my cupboard are from, you know, sort of more than 15, 20 years ago. And a lot of the names on there you'll have just completely forgotten about.
Yeah.
But they do change and they evolve. And I think that's, you know, your team, where you came to prominence, came on the back of the 2005 Ashes winning side, Vaughan's all-conquering side with Freddie and AP and the rest. But you were part of a new breed of player that came into the England setup. There was you, Monty, bless him, Graham Onions. To me, you guys, and I think you were probably at the head of this, felt very, very relatable to those of us who were playing club cricket at the time. You know, you all felt like one of us.
I know where you're going with that. Yeah. I guess you're right. You're dead right. Like, I remember at Wisden, the sort of Wisden, you know, and you win one of the five cricketers a year, they write the big blurb about it, and she said, it's Tanya Allred, she's like, she's a really good journalist. She said, it gives the air of a bloke with an emergency cheese sandwich in his pocket at all times.
But yeah, I mean, it's very true. I can imagine having a pint with you or Onions, Mustard, even Monty doesn't mind a drink. You didn't have the kind of superstar airs and graces. You need time for people. I can remember, you know, seeing you engaging with fans both at county level, would you get an England shirt on, whatever. You had time for people, and that makes a big difference to, you know, your diehard real cricket fans, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, it can't really change who you are as a person, you know? Like, you do have your superstars and stuff, like, I don't even need to mention them, part of that era. Even though they get the superstar pedestal, they're still just normal blokes. And it's different. I don't know where the perception of you were personal and this bloke wasn't. In case it's completely, well, we were just a really good team, and we looked after everything. The people that supported us, the backroom staff, cleaned up our crap. It's like the All Blacks thing, you know, like. No dickheads, that sort of thing. And that's why we were successful in a way. Like, we looked after the little things, and then the little things obviously bled into the big things that we looked after, and we just made the right decisions at the right times, and we supported each other.
Yeah. My good mate Ravi Bapara was sort of part of that era as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In the one-day stuff, Ravi was ridiculously good. Yeah, he got 3 test hundreds in a row, I think, as well.
Yeah, that's right. He did. That's West Indies, yeah.
Yeah, I was there for that. I was there for the, where he's giving it the, get my name on the board at Lords. That was a good day.
Was that your debut?
That might have been before that.
Oh, okay, yeah, right.
Previous series. That would have been like in 2007 now, or 8, maybe, I don't know. We were the same age, maybe, Rav, though. We came up all the way through junior cricket. Myself, Rav, Cookie, Samit, quite a few others like on the circuit that like managed to carve out a, you know, decent career as well.
Yeah, you did, yeah. Samit's still clinging on for dear life, isn't he? It's over at Derbyshire this year.
Bless him. Dear life is on for. But you know what? He'll do Derbyshire a good job, you know? Like, especially in the short format. He's still like wily old fox, just like balling his left armers and smacking a few sixes.
He hits the ball blimmin' hard.
He does. He has to.
So
he's too old for like running twos and threes.
Yeah, he's like Chris Gayle.
Yeah, exactly.
So, in an England shirt, have you got any sort of personal highlights from all of those glory days?
Well, yeah, definitely. Most of them were like the celebrations after we won stuff. They're the memories, like, you know, you work so hard towards a goal and then you achieve it, and then, you know, you get a proper license to go out and celebrate, like, with your friends that you've just had an amazing experience with and achieve something that either no one else has achieved or, you know, not been achieved for a long time. Those are the memories mainly that I have. Sort of T20 World Cup in Barbados, like that was a good one. Obviously 10-11 Ashes in Melbourne. It was like so many, like quite a lot, so many to count. The 2014 Championship win with Yorkshire, like doing it at Lords. Packed house on TV, and then
that was like, an amazing game, wasn't it? I remember that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, ridiculous. Like we won the champo in the first, I think it was like first 3 overs of the day. Like we needed 3 bonus points and or 1 bonus point or something. Oh, I can't remember, to be honest. Yeah, yeah. Stats and figures. I'm just.
So where did it all start? Going back, where did your love of cricket sort of first start off? And did you have any people that sort of helped you along the way in the early days?
You assume that I love it. I loved it. No, I mean, I played from being a kid, like watching my dad play for local club. Myself and my brother would either be playing in the corner like at the side of the field or behind the score box or wherever, and you know, just all day, Saturday and Sunday, and then we'd play age group cricket practice, like pretty much it was just cricket. So yeah, as kids we were fanatic, just playing with each other and together, myself and my brother. And that, I guess that's where I got really good. More, like not really coach, more natural stuff. The coaching came later. And then just progressed through the Yorkshire system, from being like seven, I think, I played my first game for the under 11s, like went to trials and then, yeah, just went, literally just jumped straight through the system, fast tracked quite a lot of it, to be honest, from missed out the academy completely, went straight from 15 to straight into the second team, made my debut at 16 for the first team. So that's, and then rest was history after that. That was me. I was signed pro while I was still at high school. So yeah, it was like exam time, GCSEs, and I didn't sack them off or whatever. I still tried, but
yeah,
bearing in mind in the midst of all that, I was having taken exams, but then leaving and skipping exams to go and play first team cricket for Yorkshire in the Norwich Union. So that was exciting. Signed pro from then, and yeah, that's it. 23 years, did that.
Were you an all-rounder in those early days, or were you more of a bowler? Or
yeah, I was more of a bowler. I literally started the first 5-6 years of my career, first-class career, as a bowler, just simply because I was 15, I was 16, they were too fast for me. I'd never seen anything like it. At 15 years old, like, I remember my debut, I faced Martin Saggers. Didn't see it. Like, if it had been straight, it just hit me. It was like, this is so fast. Batting with James Middlebrook, and he's run down and gone, just get something on it. I was like, mate, I'll just literally, I'm swinging up area, I can't see it.
It's the noise that gets me when I used to face fast bowlers. Arc at me. Of the sort of the whistling as the ball goes past, of the seam in the air, and you've just not seen it, and before you can react, it's gone. But that noise was the thing that used to get me.
It's like a
yeah, that or the leather on stump.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So Yorkshire, England. You hung your boots up in 2022, but yeah, I see that you still played a bit of club cricket last year for Hartshead Moor, and seems
that's right. Yeah. Yeah, well, we went. I retired, and then we went travelling as a family. Like, took the kids out of school. We ended up 18 months away on the road. Fantastic experience, like ridiculously good. Obviously, when you're a professional cricketer, you don't get much time at home. So it was great to reconnect with the wife and the kids and just go travelling and do what we'd always wanted to do, myself and my wife, and that was like go travelling together. And so it was like realising a bit of a dream as soon as I retired. And then we got back, and one of the guys at Hartshead, Tony Dickinson, who he sadly passed away last Friday, he said, mate, come and give us a few games. Think you'll enjoy it. And Andrew Gale was playing at the time. And he was like, mate, it's just crack. Like, you love it, this sound of that. But then played a few games. Like, didn't bowl, just batted a bit. But I just enjoyed the crack with the lads. And then I got right into it. And we, like, started winning a few. And it's like, actually, we could get promotion. I was like, do you know what? Yeah, we're invested now. So, yeah, we got promoted, ended up winning the league.
It never leaves you, the bug, really, does it? How are the bones and the knees and the back? Are they creaking or are they still okay?
I'm all right. Elbows, like, nowhere. Like, has been since 2013. four surgeries. But, yeah, I mean, the rest of me is fine. Could have done it for as long as Jimmy. Without the elbow, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, amazing how he's still going. 41 years old, and yeah. still swinging it in. Amazing. The travelling thing is interesting because as a cricketer, an international cricketer, you do travel, well, I suppose, even if you're doing franchise and all this other stuff. But it's different, isn't it? Because you don't actually get to see anywhere. You don't. It's all planes and hotels and cricket grounds. Yeah. And that's it, isn't it?
Yeah. You see the inside of the cricket ground, the inside of the bus, and the inside of your hotel. And that's it. Especially on the subcontinent, or places where you actually want to go out and experience the culture and the people and, you know, stuff like that. It's just too big of a security risk for the... And I get it. I do. If you were to get, you know, kidnapped or attacked, or you won't be the first sporting team, you know. So they kind of got to negate that risk, and that's what the security is there for. But it's much different when you go and play like BPL or I had a bit of time in India with the Legends League as well. Which was cool, you know, being able to just be left to your own devices, having got back from practice or a game or whatever, and being able to go out and go to a pub or like a restaurant it's cool. That's cool.
So I've heard these days, like you say, they're all cooped up in hotels, and I heard that there was a Call of Duty league that was going on where Stokesy and Jofra were bossing that. Yeah. If you weren't into that, going back a little bit earlier, Cookie had his dartboard and they'd set up a darts match in the hotel corridor or something.
Yeah, we had loads of stuff to keep us occupied. Table tennis and in the team room, sometimes a pool table, Cookie's dartboard. We got two or three lads who took projectors and games consoles, so there was either FIFA or Tiger Woods golf or whatever, like Call of Duty, Fortnite, all this sort of stuff. Yeah, just try and negate the boredom, really, or transport you away from the actual reality that you're actually stuck in these four walls.
How's your golf? Because that's a big part of the current England scene.
Yeah, golf. That's another one. Traveling was good when we got the opportunity to take the clubs. So Phil, the manager, was like, right, you can bring three sets. We're like, Phil, come on. It's not even four balls. So what we figured out was we could get these skinny bags, you know, the like little skinny bags, and we could get three sets of clubs into each one of the travel cases. So instead of three sets, we ended up, like, we got nine sets of clubs. Right, and then maybe another one if someone was a bit cheeky. Great way of releasing pressure and spending 4 or 5 hours just out in the fresh air, having a walk around the golf course. Really good. And I think Baz McCullum is massive on his golf, isn't he? Collie as well. Collie loves it.
Yeah.
I think pretty much there'll be a big golf syndicate, I reckon, and especially the one-day team.
I'd love to have a word with Dave Painter about making some super slim-line golf bags for all the cricketers out there that can sneak off things.
Yeah, correct. I actually played golf with Dave just before Christmas.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, he's going great guns. He's loving it.
He's got so successful with his golf shoes and sort of equipment or whatever. It's amazing. It's a really good a really good success story, isn't it?
I mean, the golf shoes are really, really good. Like, really, really good. I mean, the cricket shoes have got a little bit to do to challenge the Adidas's and Nikes and New Balances, but the golf shoes are actually really, really good.
Yeah, yeah.
They've done a good job. Yeah.
He owes me a pint as well, so there's a free plug for him. Another one.
Yeah.
So these days you are a crypto legend. How did that come about?
Since about end of 2016, start of 2017.
Okay, right, yeah, for a little while then.
Yeah, right, long time. Even before that, like reading articles and stuff like that, finding it interesting, thinking, you know, the way the future's moving forward, this is probably going to be a thing. And then it was, you know, sort of spring 2017 where I was like, do you know what? Like, let's just get in there, have a piece of this. So I remember buying Bitcoin about 6K, riding it up to 20 and then back down to 3. You're like, this is fantastic. But as soon as that, you're like hooked, aren't you? You know, so made some really good decisions over that time and some really poor ones. But the poorest being not selling at the top.
Yeah.
And buying at the bottom. But that's really tough, as you know, being a trader yourself. Yeah.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
I'm just going to have to cut that short. If you want to listen to the whole interview, go to the YouTube channel, 98 Not Out, or look for the 98 Not Out podcast. It's a really great interview, but I've just got too much to cram in tonight, so I want to get it all there. John Chubb is chomping at the bit with the non-league hour, which comes up at the top of the hour after the news. But I just said I'd have some breaking news, and I have got breaking news. The results are in from the Sports Podcast of the Year Awards, and as I feared, we have not succeeded. In third place was the Cricket Podcast. In second place, Zero Ducks Given. And the winners of the 2024 Best Cricket Podcast are No Balls. And if you look at the people behind those three podcasts, you will see that we never, ever really stood a chance on that one.
Phoenix FM.
Right, lots of county news to round up. Leicestershire have signed Australian batter Will Pukowski for the opening five county championship games of the 2024 season. And now, you will remember his progress has been interrupted by a series of concussions, and Pukowski will join Victorian teammate Peter Hanscom at Grace Road and will provide cover while Mulder completes the South African season. Club legend Mark Lane has returned to Gloucestershire as head coach on a three-year deal. Gloucester fans very happy with that. The 55-year-old featured in nearly 800 games for the club during a 19-year playing career and previously coached the club from 2005 to 2007. Hampshire have signed Aussie bowling all-rounder Michael Nisa for the first 8 matches of the Hawks Vitality Blast campaign. He was most recently part of the BBL winning Brisbane Heat alongside Tall Paul Walter from Essex. Nisa took 12 wickets during that campaign. He recently spent 3 seasons at Glamorgan. Worcester have been really busy this week. They've signed all-rounder Josh Cobb on a white ball deal for the 2024 season. It was widely rumoured that he was going to come to Essex, but he's gone to Worcester. Worcester captain Brett D'Oliveira has agreed a new contract to run until the end of the 2027 season. Worcester Red Bull vice captain Jake Libby has signed a new 4-year contract with the promoted Pairs. So some good business done there at New Road. Worcestershire left-arm spinner Danny Briggs has signed a new 2-year contract at Edgbaston. The 32-year-old ex-Hampshire and Sussex player has extended his deal to last to the end of the 2025 season. And finally, Warwickshire have signed England's T20 pace man Richard Gleeson following his end-of-season release by Lancashire. So, yes, lots of county news going on there. That's it. I've managed to squeeze it all in just about. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to Tim Bresnan being my guest tonight. Remember, head to the podcast or to the YouTube channel for the full unexpurgated version of that chat. Keep it locked to Phoenix. John Chubb is coming at you with the non-league hour, and then Gareth is here at 8 o'clock with Bumper to Bumper. I'll catch you next week for more cricket. 98 Not Out returns next Thursday at 6 o'clock. Playing us out tonight, a song that was sung by all my mates on the playground back in the day. The eminently catchy Black Slate and Amigo.
Amigo, 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 who? Amigo, 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 who? Amigo, 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 amigo. John, now go me sleeping on.
see you will go.